one of the really sacred temples of the two Canadians in the line of Aragon. Okay. Because they are depending on the birth of the meat and the blood and the mustard of the material. And everybody is interested in wearing it. So they don't know what it wears over there, not every year. Sometimes two or three, sometimes one, another year nothing. I saw the island the first time in 1926 when I came by on the old Indian Service Post Foster. We stopped there probably 10 days and then I left on the bus with such a thing. The next trip I went up on the revenue cattle and stayed over the window and returned the next fall to the university. I did that two times, and during those two windows, I observed the way of the natives on the island. I left with them. And consequently, I saw all the ceremonies that they had before the wedding season started and after. Also, I was allowed to sign on a wedding ship, a whaleboat. And so I could see the whole thing in detail. I also was allowed to partake of the ceremonies to keep the whaling season, usually in early April. We have, for instance, first rope worship, then comes the boat worship, then comes the worship. Doesn't mean that they worship the moon. There are four or five. At that time, there were five groups in the village of Sambo, which belong together. And each group has their worship at a certain time, a certain place of the moon. And in the olden days, they had no calendar, but they wouldn't miss it by day when the worship took place for the different groups. It is very simple. There are old men standing up on top of a mound in the village. They'll be there early in the morning. And they watch when the sun comes up over a certain peak of the hill behind the village. That they watch that when it gets in between some 50 feet or so, then that's the time for this one to worship. The moon comes up a little further all the time every day, and when it gets over 10 or 6, then it's this one for time to worship, and so on until all the groups have their worship. During this worship, during that time, there is no visiting between groups. That visit is taboo. When I stand on, I could not go over to my friends over here or over here and talk to them. I had to stay over with my group. I could visit all I wanted around my group. But I never could have looked out of it. During the one worship is rather serious, and that's the boat worship when the captain prepares all the food and the chants of the prayers, you might say. And it's a very interesting thing to see, not even his own school members could witness that. They cannot listen to his son. I could only go in there after he talked it over with his brother, who was rather reluctant to let me be in there at the station when he was doing that. He chants the whole night long. He always stops. He doesn't need a discipline. And his wife is coming every now and then and bring a bowl of water. It brings a plate full of chopped up fish and reindeer meat and reindeer fat. And there's a spoon, the pasta there, all set up in small samosas. And he is sort of blessing that thing, and he thinks over that, and he's very intense about his thinking and singing. I saw all that, and the only reason I took the practice of that is because I didn't understand any of the things he's saying. So that let him ease a little bit and pursue it. Those are the ceremonies before the hunting, but now we go to the hunting. The ceremonies to tell you about those that take for the life. The hunting in April, around middle of April, the different groups will have all the boats on the beach. The beach at that time is still full of ice. It's piled up on the beach, and each group has to cut the boat, throw down the away, where it could pull the boat down and back up again. On top of the bank, it's about 20 feet high, it's under where we were, a little lower than it is at the boat row. On the bank is the boat, and that's equipped with a mast, a sail, the harpoon, the shoulder gun, the captain's paddle, and the anchor, and they had a motor in there, which however was never used during the whale hunting. The motor is only used after the hunt to kill the whale and the shore. Day and night, the men watching the sea, we almost know it to the day, and some claim that we know exactly the day when the first flow can be seen as a whale. As soon as a spout is seen, they all pull the boats down, all independently. There are four, and there's the captain who steers, he's the owner of the boat. There's a striker, who's on the bow of the boat. There are two men who throw the poke. The hook throws. Hook and the rope with which the anchor the hook to the whale of his harpoon. Then there's a man there who does nothing but point to the sail according to the wind, and it's the captain who tries to bring the boat over the hill. You know exactly by the pounding, you'll wonder easy enough. The boat, the whale comes up and starts. Then it goes down. It'll come up very lazily and starts here again. The usual starts two times. By that time, they try to get the sail ready and get over to that between the second and third spot. The third spot after that it goes down, but you have to get the whale right at the when it comes up the third time or the second time if you're close enough. But the striker, the captain, he steers the boat over the head of the whale, and the striker he strikes the whale and it's other side to the different strike first. But go right over the head. And by that time, he sails over there to the side. And by that time, by the time the whale gets the harpoon, and I'm in the book that's going out the Buddha, got out of the pastor there, and the world and goes down, and the sounds and such, the book down. There are three books on each line, or there are two lines with two books. The first, Spotted Seals, two of them are about that high. They're all inflated already. With the soil is half in them. The rope is wound around the hook. And it's tied together with very fine whalebone, very, very tiny sticks. And, they throw the whole thing in there. The last hook is a small one. That's the signal. When the last hook comes up over the foot, and that comes up, they know exactly where the whale is. Also, they know which way the whale went. So they will go over there and try to harpoon him again. But the man who struck the whale first, he is done for. He cannot, his tail comes down, and another little hook he has ready goes up there to the mast, to the top of the mast, and nobody can work anymore on that hook. He can do nothing. He's just in reverence to the whale. He showed something, he didn't, and he needed it very much to lift him there. So he cannot even, if he had a shoulder gun, he could not even sit that anymore. Usually they have a sort of brass shoulder gun in there, but not always. Somebody in the outfit will help. But after the thing, the whale is stuck, anybody can go there and strike him again. And then when the division of the food comes, and they throw the whale into the beach to cut the whale up. The second striker, which is a second person, the third one gets to another person, they're all pounded out and segregated. So many blades of whale bones, and so many ribs, and so many of the tongue, some of the tongue, and some of the mustache, it's all cut up by that rule. They have a standing rule for all those things. Now when I was there, they were very religious, according to their own way. So there are two Christian families, for example, and the rest of the people were all pagans. They were non-Christian. So there was a little rivalry between the Christians and the non-Christians. And I'm going to tell you now, one day, one of the Christians, an individual who came to our house, I was living with a Christian too, and he complained that when he put the boat in the water this morning, he said the boat nearly sank. So he wasn't very careful during the night, and it's in April, middle of April, it's still dark. And somebody went in there and drilled a hole in the bottom of the boat. When they all went in to try to get a whale, he had to stay back with him because it filled up with water. So he didn't know who it was, and he couldn't do very much to try to get it, but he plugged it up again. He went out later on. The season was quite to start around. It's over a month later. But a little things like that did happen over there. When the captain strikes the whale, and the whale is saved then, usually at the last, sometimes I chase this line down. Hooks, and the more lines around it, the more hooks are there, the more tired the whale gets, and when it comes up, it can haul a good enough air, it goes right down again, it's dead. And in no time at all, he's right on top of the water there, and then they steer him with a lance and with a steel lance, which about, the blade is about that long. And they have long handles that it can reach out to get him right in the heart of the top of the thing. When the whale is safe then the captain begins to operate. The whale, they let him sink down so he can get over the whale with the whale boat. He goes right over it and then he comes back and he holds up his paddle, his special paddle he has. And he hollers, three times. And then every time he comes around, he'll do the same thing. It's a kind of real thing. Don't hit the drink to cut off the flute. The flute, nobody can help with the cut. The flute is taken out and tied right on the bow of the boat. That's the flute. Then the sex items are removed and they are cast in the water. Then the people who come, the high prince are still in there. Sometimes at night time they have very pure bombs. A bomb should explode as soon as it strikes a bit of out and down. It should penetrate and explode inside. But that will almost kill the whale at once. But during all the times the whale over there, you never did have a bomb explode. You always had to wear them out with the hook. And sometimes they had old bombs, and sometimes the bombs, and I really believe that many times they go right out of the bell, because the old and the rubber plants they have on there to hold it in is so hard and stumbly that the bomb falls out when it's plastic before or whatever. Anyhow, it's supposed to float inside the hole and kill them. The people all then hit on. They hit on to those harpoons that are in the whale already, diving arms, and they begin to pull the whale ashore. They said it's impossible to throw the shore, and they tie up on an ice floe, and they begin to hit the whale up. It comes down to much like a system of the blubber in the meat, then all the meat you can possibly get. Sometimes they take out the heart out in the ice, and if the weather is bad, then they have to forget about the heart and some of the meat to take out. They take home what they can, and everybody can load up. It's really unloaded then on the beach again, and on the beach it's being divided by the captain, who's cool. He doesn't do a thing. As a matter of fact, he cannot work for a week. He cannot go out the next day, no matter how many whales are out there. It's just an arrangement they have among themselves, and for some reason, that's the way they've been traveling that for years already. The meat then is divided among the captain and the crew, and the second striker. It's so many flaps of mustache and baleen, then the third one and the fourth one and so on. Then the eyes are taken out by the captain. Every whale he gets, you can tell on a boat captain paddle how many whales he killed during his life. They're all in the shape of a flute, the decorations on the paddle. He takes the flute from the whale's eye and mixes it up with the soot from the lamp, makes a black sand out of it, and he puts another mark on his paddle. So some of them have 8 or 10 on there, some of them have 1, some of them have 4 or 5. The paddle, and nobody can touch, it's being tied then to the boat on which the skin boat is tied up on top. That's the one he used for the skin, for the boat worker. That's tied on that, and everybody respects that thing. Then if they don't get the whales don't go up during the day, either if it gets a little late and usually let the walrus around and kill, then the oldest man can then decide what to do. Usually a couple of them get together, they holler to each other, the boats are all nearby, they holler to each other, and then they say, well, no whales, getting late now, we're sitting just right up anyhow. Let's get some of the walrus over there. Then they load up with walrus meat and egrets and smaller seals. Get what they can, bring home some food anyhow. Then when they're out of the the virus hurts sometimes when the clothes come on with a lot of female virus, so sometimes there are several hundred on the floor. With the babies, then they took out some babies and kill the baby, and that's put away for a gift in the cellar that's marked for the next year worship again. Next year, the moon worship will consume that baby. That put it all up, so it can be given to first the sacrifice to the seed, and then the air, and the tree takes part of eating those things to come with the communion. And then the people who come from them, after the worship is over, they eat it up. So that's a good step. So in those days, they had reindeer over there, lots of them. But every year they had reindeer stopped in Siberia. So the relations, they bring that stop over, and they keep it up on the outpost. Keep it all covered, and up on the post with the reindeer fat is also kept the water vessel we use for putting water on the animal. Then the tray we use for seal oil, and for the fish, and for the baby seal, and for the mudfish and the fish. It's all kept up under a cover. It won't be removed until the next year. Only the captain can take it down here. He has to have some of his crew members to take it and then handle it very carefully when they bring it in for the workers. Everything is taken care of. The rope has to be almost sacred to give him good luck. The boat has to be sacred. The whole thing centers around the ceremony. When I come the blanket passing off the next day or so in the townships, in the houses, in a way, it's interesting. It's kind of simple that I have to tell you, but when you see it all, it's just kind of a little different. And yet, when he does the singing and the preparing of the food and preparing of the boats and the ropes, he's dressed in the best of houses. He handles nothing without a glass or nothing. He has a brand new gloves as a rule there, right then, to handle the food and handle the ceremonial vessels too. And so that's the food, and they have to work it. They cannot go out there with their bare hands. They have to have mittens or gloves. They give them to them. If they feel that I want, they come to the ground. I don't know, it's not, yeah, it's not very much. What do you mean, tools happen? Well, they make the blubber space out of steel blades, saw blades, for this one. They call it blubber space. But with oven guns, it's a catamaran injection that has iron in front, a long iron with a harpoon housing. Then you have the place for the shell. It's a shell about that long. By which the harpoon is cut through the bell. And they're quite modern. They're made in a new Bedford, I think. Then the brass gun is a modern thing. The ones I was on, I rode with two different parties, which belong together. They had the railboat, new Bedford railboat. but that are some there had anyway. Then Ramanyal, Kabu on the ice on a boat. Only one family, the other had not enough men for a cure. His two daughters were allowed to drive, but they always were for themselves somewhere. They couldn't go near the other boats at all. When I came down with the Atahat, a boat, Atahat was a Christian, but he had two people, a father and his son, from Siberia. And the Siberian insisted that I should stay ashore. He didn't want me on there at all. And in Siberia, I understand no white man ever goes out on a boat, hearing this notice. And I had nearly all the garments there. A native made over there from Sandy Heights and Clayston. But I had a white man bag on. And he refused to, he was the sailor tender. He refused to go on the boat. And so we had to, to prescribe to sell some, amulet on the belt that would, prescribe us. I should have taken a rope, any kind of rope, steel spin rope, or egress rope, that would be alright. But I never could handle it, so I could try to make out with the belt I had to tie around the other side of the cycle. All egress. All egress. Egress. Half inch, yeah. Now, also, I make a mistake by, for instance, pointing at a rail. You cannot point at a rail. And being unexperienced along those lines, when I see one spot, you know, I thought the others didn't see it. And I saw one over there. That old man nearly busted me, if I can imagine. Egress. That's a big deal.
Oh,
it's a deal with you. I thought with that line you can say anything. Either it's even start a tail line or something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Then they have to dry it again. Yeah. They dry it and roll it. You have to tie the line together when it goes over the post, see? Because you're so stiff to string. If one touches you in the arm or in the, over the head or the legs, you're finished. You throw that out with the rope, see? But that they are tied in four places with a fine balloon. And throw the whole thing out there, then the word pulls on it while it breaks all those ties, see? And it's a lengthy tie. No, you're sitting they sit right over the foot. But you have to learn how to hold a foot so they don't spring out. You throw the whole thing out. As soon as the striker, you watch the striker. As soon as the body is out, soon as out through the foot. There's one here and one over there. Yeah. Got off you. Yeah, if he's a good striker, he strikes right down. With the thing in his hand. Yeah, because especially when a whale is struck once already, when the others come up, and sometimes when a whale is struck, I tell you, that's something they do. Then he comes up, they start nodding their blood, so it's just, if you go near them, and then he may have to throw that, see? Harpoon. Yeah. With the diving gun. Last thing is when the whale lies almost still already. He's out of air, out of he can't go down anymore. He's in the length and it's a long length. The length the length comes in two parts of handle. And you can, they fit together. The other one, you lash them around, so they don't have to go too close if a whale is too mean. So they can reach them in the, in that part of it. Probably 20 feet of it. It's that long, yeah. Oh yeah, those length handles, they come apart, see? Yeah? So they fit in the book. And then the hacker, when they know that a whale is already hard pinned, they're going to get ready and the last hand is together, then they reach out and finish. One time we had a whale that belonged to our family, belonged to the group I handled it, the whale was practically dead as far as we know. We were all standing there on the ice. The whale was lying here, didn't move at all. So they were deciding, could you launch him or not? And they decided, oh, he's dead already. The side cavity of the head, the mouth, is next to surgeon's hair in the center. We had one with, I think, 11 short-foot, 10-foot, I saw the rope on up there. We had one this thing, it's just 6 feet long, I think. So that rope is about 6 feet.
And it was a lot of
holes. Yeah, it was close to how everybody hooked us on. One boat, they used the motor, yeah, to go in. So I think it's over already for that day. They cannot handle it. It's enough for them. It's enough for anybody to handle it. It's got a lot of this to run apart. Sometimes you have to think about that. You cannot, if the weather is getting bad, the ice is too bad, you cannot get through with the loaded boat. Then you have to think the whole thing. The skeleton and the meat, the heart. To just take off the blubber and the whatever they can grab and go home.
Mm-hmm.
You mean how long the whale would last?
Yeah,
how long
would it
last? Oh, two or three whales, but two and two, all right. They have other things to eat too. At St. Barra, when I was up there, they had 17, I think, a couple of years ago. Last year, I think only 3 or 4. They had that money, and you could hardly get a piece of mustard up there. It's all divided up, and then some people who didn't get in on that, they had to pay $1 and have a pound for their mustard. Tons and tons of mustard, those people. The store has a lot of that. But I mean, when I say you can hardly get it, I mean get it cheap. In the houses, they hardly had any. In the cellar. Yeah. Yeah, it's just working out. Minimum. Better ones than they have in the hotel. You mean salad? Yeah, they got two things over there. That's what it's
now. How is it
The mustard?
Yeah.
Eat it raw mostly. Some people boil it. But you can eat it raw. That's the skin and the fat in it.
Yeah.
Maybe the old Siberian has something to do about the belt. You were there before I got there.
Well, I'm very good to talk all over. Thank you very much.
That's what people are thinking of here.
Quarter to work, and then I'm sure that the people here will have lots of little things to ask you as we gather around the coffee shop. So, again, thank you. This is the recording. Well, you did a very good job. This is November 16, 1961, Historical Society meeting, and Dr. Otto William Geist of the University of Alaska has just given us a little talk on whale hunting in Central Island. Mm-hmm.